New protests erupt across Iran after a wave of poisonings at girls' schools spreads to all provinces. VOA's Persian service tells us how Iranian authorities have responded. Plus, an Atlantic Council analyst examines possible motives for the attacks that come 5 months into a nationwide protest movement.
A lot of Iranians think that these attacks are revenge against young Iranian girls, essentially Iranian Gen Z, who have been leading the protests.
And later in the program, a Venezuelan opposition figure tells us why the West should worry about growing ties between Iran and his nation's autocratic president, Nicolas Maduro.
They have developed a very solid relationship, which, in my concern, is very negative for democracy, human rights, and Western values.
From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Iran. Good morning, I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Iran saw a surge of nationwide protests on Tuesday as Iranians expressed outrage at a major escalation of school poisonings around the country, mainly targeting girls. Reports received by VOA's Persian service and posted on social media indicated there were street protests in at least 19 Iranian cities, including the capital Tehran, as well as major cities like Mashhad, Isfahan, and Karaj. A video posted online by VOA Persian host Masi Alinejad appeared to show a crowd of teachers and parents in Karaj chanting an alert to others. "Hey, hey, quiet people, you will be poisoned next." Some of the reports said security forces cracked down on the protests, firing tear gas and bullets and arresting demonstrators. VOA could not independently verify those reports because it is barred from working inside Iran. After the number of girls sickened in 4 months of attacks grew into the thousands, Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei broke his silence on Monday and called them an unforgivable crime. For more on how his government has responded to the attacks, I spoke on the phone Tuesday with VOA Persian's Arash Sigarchi.
Iranian officials were quiet about this situation until this week. After 3 months, a lot of incidents reported, they started to deny. They said, we don't know, maybe they are students trying to do some adventure and something like that. And suddenly, this week, Ali Khamenei just made a statement about the poisoning. And right after his speech, when he mentioned that it's a big crime, Iran judiciary head just came out and talked about we will prosecute and we will follow every criminal who is involved. And today, just today, the head of the investigation office under judiciary just announced we didn't arrest anyone. Then almost 2 hours later, Interior Minister actually just announced we arrested some of people who are involved, but the official didn't give any detail.
When you talk about the lack of information about who the authorities are detaining, the authorities have actually named some people that they arrested, but these were actually journalists who were covering these attacks. So why have the authorities been arresting journalists?
Actually, we saw this pattern a lot in past months and past years. Every time there is a big disaster in the country, the first thing they do is arresting reporters and journalists. As you remember, when this movement started 4 months, 5 months ago, the first people who were arrested were two young women reporters who reported about Mahsa Amini's family and her death. And they started arresting some other people. Again, the pattern is same. They started warning and arrest journalists who were involved. For example, 2 days ago, they arrested the first reporter who reported about poisoning in Qom city. And now more journalists were arrested because of the situation. The thing is, many activists, many political figures, they believe these attacks are supported somehow by government. For example, last night, Zahra Rahnavard, the wife of Mirhossein Mousavi, who is under house arrest, just published an article on their website and said, this is kind of related to our movement of women life freedom and retaliation by the government. This is a strong word we hear from Rahnavard and other activists in these days.
There have also been some protests going on around the country by, you know, parents who are worried about the health of their children. What kind of protests have we seen, and how have the security forces responded to them?
They mainly, I can say, parents worry about their child. They come in front of the school. They try to talk with school's officials to get answer. But in some reports, we can hear some of the officials are related to Iranian intelligence, or they're covered by them. So the parents don't get the proper response. So they gather and protesting. For example, in Sanandaj city, in Tehran, in other cities. The thing is, I can see some relation between this kind of protest and protests we have seen in last month. For example, one of the slogans they use is, if we don't get united, we would be killed one by one, which they are addressing the previous protests we have seen. And, you know, another slogan they use is death to Taliban. They think, the parents think, this kind of attacks are that kind of agenda Taliban has with banning girls for education. And some of them, they chanting, just we want safety for our schools. Officials and, you know, the police trying to not let them protest. For example, in Tehran, Allama Tabatabai University, we saw people were attacked by police, or in the Sanandaj city, in Rash city, almost more than 300 people gathered, but the police didn't let them to be there, and, you know, they were against them.
Well, I will definitely keep an eye on what's going on inside Iran. Arash Sigarchi, Managing Editor in VOA's Persian Service, always good to have you on Flashpoint Iran.
Thank you so much.
With still no official word from Tehran about who is responsible for poisoning Iranian schoolgirls around the country and why, researchers have been looking at circumstantial evidence to try to find answers. One of them is Holly Dagres of the Atlantic Council. I spoke to her by phone on Monday and asked what she thinks is going on.
I guess what we really need to unpack is these two mainstream theories. And one is that some think the schoolgirls are being targeted by hardline elements to stop them from receiving an education, and along the lines of what we've seen with Afghanistan and what the Taliban's been doing. Now, we have to remember the Islamic Republic's been in power for four decades, and this was not something that ever happened before. So I don't really believe in this narrative.
Why do you not believe in that one?
Because, I mean, if a girl's getting an education was an issue, they would have been doing this years ago. Like I said, the Islamic Republic's been around for four decades. Why suddenly now? A lot of Iranians think that these attacks are revenge against young Iranian girls, essentially Iranian Gen Z, who have been leading the protests since the murder of Mahsa Jina Amini in mid-September 2022.
Well, I've seen that theory as well, but when I've seen some of the images of the schoolgirls affected, we're seeing some very young girls here, maybe as young as 10, 11. They haven't been out on the streets protesting, have they? I mean, why would people want to punish them?
Well, that is a valid point, but actually during the protests, we've seen elementary girls, school girls, also protest against authorities. There was a viral video, maybe you remember, of girls yelling, chanting at a member of the Basij, like, Basij Boro Gomsho, Basij Get Lost. And I've seen a bit viral video of elementary school girls that had taken off their headscarf and they were waving them around, chanting Zan Zendegi Azadi, Women, Life, Freedom. And so a lot of Iranians are thinking to themselves, well, young girls were leading the protests. And when you look at the bigger picture, I mean, Michael, we have to remember that the Islamic Republic is an authoritarian government. It has eyes and ears everywhere. It even has China style surveillance technology actually from China to monitor Iran's metro stations that the woman is not wearing mandatory hijab. So for us to say that the security apparatus of the Islamic Republic can't figure out who is behind these mass poisonings that have hit, I believe, over 20 of Iran's 31 provinces is really hard to believe. And how is that possible?
Can you think of any reasons why the Iranian government might be allowing these attacks to continue or tolerating them, as some analysts are saying, especially the American Enterprise Institute? They have daily updates on the situation from Iran, and that is their conclusion, that there is some kind of toleration going on. What do you think?
I haven't been following AEI's reporting on this, but when you're targeting young girls that more or less were part of a protest movement against the government, and we have to remember, this wasn't a protest about hijab. It was about the status quo. It was about the end of the Islamic Republic. And you hear it in the chants, whether it's death to Khamenei, Magbar Khamenei, or I will fight, I will die, I will take back Iran, or Khamenei is a murderer, his guardianship is invalid. And people wanted the Islamic Republic gone. And when you have been seeing protests, there's been continuity since Mahsa Jina Amini's murder in mid-September 2022. We've never seen continuity in protest movement like this ever before. And when you're seeing these targets, these mass poisonings, these, and depending on who you ask, chemical attacks, even targeting these young girls, to me, it's saying that this is an act of revenge and also an act to say, if you step out of line again, this is what might happen to you. This is your fate.
In light of all that, we had the Iranian Supreme Leader come out today and finally comment on these incidents, which have been going on for months. And he used language that was pretty harsh, saying those responsible for these attacks should essentially be executed. Why do you think he waited until now to speak about this publicly? And why do you think he's issuing this very tough message, given the appearances of his authorities somehow tolerating what's going on?
Well, I think it's important to remember that these poisonings started at the end of November. So the first reported incident happened in the Holy City Qom. And over time, the numbers increased. And it really wasn't until mid-February was there more outrage in the country from parents, understandably worried and angry that authorities weren't taking the matter more seriously. And so we started seeing them protest outside of schools, but also government offices. So it became a bigger story over time, and partly because the attacks were happening more and more. It's become a national story. You can't ignore that over 1,000 schoolgirls have been poisoned. And so it became a topic of public discussion on social media and with Iranian officials, including to the highest, whether it was President Ebrahim Raisi or Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei addressing it. You're hearing them casting blame on, like, more or less a foreign hand. We've mostly been hearing that it's some foreign enemy that's behind it.
Is there any evidence of that?
I mean, absolutely not. But this is what they're putting out, which is typical of the clerical establishment. When all else fails, blame the foreign hand. It's their playbook. What we've also seen them say also is that Western media and the enemies are exaggerating the coverage. And funny enough, state media did a segment the other night, and one of my tweets was featured in it, which I'm very proud of. I wear it as a badge of honor that they think us Western analysts and journalists are putting out propaganda to foment unrest in the country, is what they're saying, that we're trying to arouse the anger of people in Iran to protest against the regime. That seems to be the going line of thought right now.
The Iranian people do seem angry enough as it is about these poisonings. Holly Dagres, non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, on the line from Washington, D.C. Great to have you on Flashpoint Iran.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure, Michael.
Visit voanews.com and click the Iran tab at the top of the page for updates on Iran throughout the day. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Iran. I'm Michael Lippin. Iran and Venezuela have held a series of high-level meetings in recent weeks to highlight the increasing economic cooperation between the two longtime allies, both heavily sanctioned by the United States. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian visited Venezuela in early February and met again with his Venezuelan counterpart Ivan Gil Pinto at the end of the month when both men were in Geneva. As part of their growing alliance, Iran has been trying to help Venezuela to revive its crumbling energy industry, but details of that assistance are vague. Julio Borges is an exiled member of Venezuela's opposition Justice First Party. I spoke to him by phone last Friday and asked what he has learned about Iranian assistance to Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro.
We have been very concerned about the relationship between Iran and Maduro. It's a relationship that started when President Chavez was alive. And it started as something that people make jokes because they established a plant to produce Iranian bicycles in Venezuela. And people took that issue as some joke. But this little joke has been growing and growing and growing. And in my view, and according to our research, they have developed a very solid relationship, which in my concern is very negative for democracy, human rights, and Western values.
Iran is providing a lot more than bicycles now to Venezuela, it seems.
Yeah. The point that I went to make with the bicycle anecdote is that sometimes people don't see how this kind of regime work together, building relationship with this kind of facade. And then what they are really building is strong and anti-democratic links, which are very dangerous for the whole region as such.
And why do you think they are so dangerous?
Well, we have different levels. First of all, because Maduro's agenda and the Iranian agenda is clearly an agenda against democracy, is clearly an agenda against human rights, is clearly an agenda against the Western values, and they find for the first time in history a place at the heart of America in which he can develop openly a program in order to be present in Latin America. This is really dangerous. This is the first time that it's happening, and we are concerned about that. And in my experience, many countries are becoming more and more aware and more concerned about what's going on in Venezuela and their relationship with Iran.
In terms of what's going on in Venezuela, there were also reports in February by the Reuters news agency that Iran has agreed to help Venezuela repair its largest refining complex at Paraguana through a deal between PDVSA and Iran's state-owned National Iranian Oil Refining and Distribution Company. Can you confirm any of this?
Yes, we are aware that the visit of the foreign minister of Iran to Venezuela has to do with this project in order to repair what is called in Venezuela the Centro de Refinación Paraguaná, CRP. And this will be done through a company called Njordic. Njordic is an Iranian company that has been sanctioned by the U.S. because it has used oil and the oil power in order to support the Revolutionary Guard in Iran.
You're talking about the National Iranian Oil Refining and Distribution Company there.
Yeah, Njordic. And it's an agreement that has been handled in a very dark and close relationship between Maduro and Iran. And when I was member of the parliament, all these agreements between Maduro and Iran or Maduro and China or Maduro and Cuba were completely closed for the knowledge of the parliament. So they were top secret. And in this time, what we know is leaks that we have about this agreement, that is an agreement for more than $100 million in order to repair the refinery, Centro Refineración Paraguaná, which, by the way, was destroyed by Maduro himself, because it has produced many, many accidents in this refinery.
Well, what do you think is behind the secrecy concerning these projects, you know, involving PDVSA and Iran?
Well, the secrecy has to do with corruption because there is no accountability. The secrecy has to do with all the support that each regime gives to the other. There is an underground relationship. If you remember a year ago, last June, in Argentina, a plane was stopped by the authorities, and it was a Venezuelan plane that was used to Iran in order to transport different things in Latin America. And it also had to do with some radical groups in Iran. And in my view, all this secrecy has to do with this connection between this operation with political agendas, corruption, and even organized crime.
Another thing I wanted to ask you is about this deepening cooperation between Iran and Venezuela. It's spread to many sectors of the Venezuelan government and economy. What do the people of Venezuela think about Iran's growing involvement in the regular life of their country?
Well, that's a very important question. People feel that Venezuela right now is like a country under different occupations. Maduro has opened the door of Venezuela to the Russians, for example, and they go freely to the different places in Venezuela for recreation. They has opened the doors for the Cubans, and the Cubans are handling everything in Venezuela since many years ago, education, healthcare, and even within the army force. And the presence of the Iranians and people from different countries that are different from our culture. And as you ask, this is very important, for the regular Venezuelan people, is something strange, is something that has nothing to do with our tradition, is something that is like a political occupation of our country, and is changing or trying to change our traditional and democratic values. And that's in the bottom line is my main concern about Venezuelan future and this use of the country, because at the end of the day, what they are using is simply using our country as a base in order to develop operations in Latin America. And this is something that has to be taken seriously by Western countries.
Well, the Venezuelan leader, President Maduro, has also said recently that he would like a normalization of relations with the United States. And after he said that, Iran, as you might expect, was expressing some public concern, saying, no, we don't want you, Venezuela, to go down that route. Obviously, Iran and the U.S. Have a very tense relationship. So how much of an impact do you think Maduro's signals about normalization with the U.S. could affect his relationship with Iran?
Well, I think that Maduro, he wants to be in the best place of all. He wants to have relationship with the U.S. He wants to keep this subordination with the Cubans. He wants to be a partner of the Russians in order to avoid the sanctions, as well as the Iranians. He wants to be protected by China. And he wants the best of the world at the same time. So in my view, we have to be in a situation of increasing and building more pressure to Maduro in order to choose if he wants to be in the side of the democratic world, the free world, the human rights world, or if he wants to be part of autocracies, anti-democratic and anti-Western values. And this is something that has to be black or white to Maduro. And he wants to be in a gray zone, which is very dangerous for democracy and human rights all over Latin America.
Well, Julio Borges, member of the Primero Justicia or Justice First Party, thank you very much for speaking with us on Flashpoint Iran.
Thank you, Michael.
That's all for this week's show. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Great to have you with us, and please come back next week for another Flashpoint Iran.